SEC fans, this is John Crist from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS podcast. Game week, finally. We're coming to you from the iHeartMedia studio, WDAE in Tampa, Florida, 620 AM and 95.3 FM. You can follow me on Twitter at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode is former Ole Miss, Auburn, Texas Tech, and Cincinnati head coach Tommy Tuberville. This season, instead of on the sideline, he'll be serving as the newest analyst for ESPN. Coach, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the dark side, and you'll never win a game in this profession, but you'll never lose one either.
Not quite as much pressure either. I can remember over the last years of this week going into the first game, it's the unknown, you know, that you're getting ready for, and that's the worst thing for a coach. So interesting week for a lot of coaches, and I'm looking forward to starting a little bit of a new career.
That's absolutely correct. And before we get started here, Coach, this Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. The best party ahead of Florida State, Alabama is Saturday in Atlanta at the Bud Light Tailgate Tour. It's on the corner of Marietta Street and Centennial Olympic Park Drive. 3 p.m. until kickoff at 8 p.m. They're going to have the grill fired up, Seminole and Crimson Tide swag to give away, not to mention two complimentary Bud Lights per ticket holder. Trust me, folks, I went to one of these things last year before Florida, Georgia. It is quite the spectacle. It's the first of four stops this year on the Bud Light Tailgate Tour this season, but none is going to be bigger than Bama FSU. You must be 21 years of age to enter. To get your tickets, go to BudLight.com and click on the Tailgate Tour button at the top of the homepage. Again, that's Saturday in Atlanta, not too far away from the stadium. It's at the corner of Marietta Street and Centennial Olympic Park Drive, 3 p.m. until they finally toe meet leather at 8 p.m. And now Tommy Tuberville. Coach, let's start by telling our listeners a little more about what you'll be doing exactly for the worldwide leader this season.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot more about, the announcing side. And what happens, you have nine people, you have a crew of nine. You have a director, producer, a sideline reporter, an analyst, a play-by-play guy, and you work in groups. It's kind of like a team. And you prepare for the game just like a coach and a team prepares to play the game. So my play-by-play announcer is Mike Patrick, who's been announcing for a long time. He's one of the pros at it. I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with him. He's worked many of my games over the years as an assistant, as a head coach. He's been doing this, I guess, close to 45, 50 years.
So long time.
Looking forward to working with him and learning from him. But, I'm going to be a coach. I'm going to be a coach in the booth talking about what I see and from a coach's and player's perspective and maybe give a little bit different insight than what a regular analyst would give.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with my next question. What are the types of things that you can offer a broadcast that a traditional analyst may not, maybe even that a former player may not? Obviously, the coaching perspective is going to be different than just about anybody else with a mic.
Well, I think, a lot of people look at it and they talk about the play afterwards and they second guess a little bit. I think I'm going to be a first guesser instead of a second. I want to kind of predict what's going to happen, what the coaches and players are thinking, the game plan that they have, what they're going to try, how they're going to try to attack, how they're going to play defense. Are they going to be pressured? Are they going to defend? I think I'm going to give a little bit different perspective of how a coach and player looks at playing a game. Third and six, before the play is snapped, I think it would be a good time to run a power play, thinking that they might be in a little bit more of a passing mode in terms of defending the pass, things like that, and kind of give a little bit more insight. But I do know one thing. I'm gonna try to let the people watch the game, because I'm one of those that over the years has watched many games. I think sometimes the announcers talk a little bit too much. Instead of just describing what's going on, they try to get into every detail. But I want to do a job again from a more different perspective of trying to, okay, this is how they're prepared. This is what they want to do. Is it working? Is it not working? How do they need to change? And what they need to do the second half once you get to that point, and the adjustments that they need to make.
It sounds like you've gotten some very good advice already. I agree with you. Sometimes less is more. The game can be entertaining enough in itself, so don't swallow it whole. But I, of course, want you on my show to talk about your coaching career, the things you've done over the decades. Let's start with Ole Miss. Your first season in the Grove was 1995, and you inherited a program that was under some pretty severe NCAA sanctions at the time, scholarship restrictions and things of that nature. And you managed to turn the Rebels into a winner while you were there. I'm guessing your situation is fairly similar to what Matt Luke is going through right now. So put yourself in his shoes and maybe remember what it was like for you 20 or so years ago taking this job for the first time.
Well, I was very fortunate. I spent 10 years, a few with Jimmy Johnson, a few with Dennis Erickson, left there and went to work at Texas A&M 1 year for R.C. Slocum, most as defensive coordinator. And as you said, I took the job in December 1st, 1994, knowing all throughout the fall that they were going to hire a new coach because they had an interim coach. And Joe Lee Dunn, he took over for Billy Brewer about the same time that in July that this past changeover happened. And when I took the job, they had not received their penalties. I knew that they were being investigated. I was told straight up. I think myself, David Cutcliffe interviewed, Tommy Bowden interviewed, several others. I took the job and knowing that within the next week or so we were going to be given sanctions. And we didn't know how bad they were going to be, but they were devastating. I had 13 scholarships for the next 2 years, no TV for a year, no bowl for a year. And it was one of the toughest things I've ever had to do. Matt Luke, he's in for a challenge. He's taken over a program that has been investigated for the last year, year and a half, maybe 2 years. Now the coach leaves in different circumstances. It really had nothing to do with the probation or the sanctions getting ready to happen. So he's trying to keep them together. And, you know, I got the job because when I went in to talk to the committee, I said, listen, here's what I want to do. I want to take this job and bring in a young staff that really cares nothing about the sanctions. They just going to have fun, make the program become fun for the players, and try to work through this hard situation the best as we can. And that's exactly what I did. And we're fortunate we did that. But, again, it was so hard to – matter of fact, Matt Luke was the first guy that I recruited. He was a legacy kid. His brother played at Ole Miss. He's from the Gulf Coast. I flew down. He had already committed to Rice. He was a center. And I basically sat in front of his parents who love Ole Miss, and I said, listen, there's nothing I can do. I don't have a scholarship. We already have enough offensive linemen, but I would love to have him walk on. If he walks on, I'll make sure he gets a scholarship. And Matt and his parents sacrificed for 2 years, came to Ole Miss, and was part of a rebuilding process. So that's what Matt's looking at. He's looking to just to survive this year and then hopefully become the head coach, which I think he would do a great job.
Now, that is an amazing story. I didn't realize that myself, the connection you have with Coach Luke and how it's come full circle like that. Granted, it was a long time ago when he was an 18-year-old potential walk-on. Of course, as you said, a legacy kid with the Rebels. But did you see any traits with him as a walk-on, eventual scholarship player, eventually team captain, that might make him a hell of a coach himself one day?
Well, you know, you could just tell the character of the kid and the parents. And again, the love that they had for the school. Now, again, he could have gone to Tulane. He could have gone to Rice. He could have gone to several universities with full scholarship. And we just told him the truth. You know, and that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do is sit in front of parents and say, listen, we want you to sacrifice, the scholarship. Come to Ole Miss. I can't put you on scholarship for 2 years. After 2 years, I can do that. But Matt came in, great attitude, played right away, and was a force in rebuilding that program. So he's a piece of the University of Mississippi. He's a piece of what happened. He's a piece of how it built back. Now he's got the obligation now of trying to build it back to what it needs to be. Unfortunately, this has happened. I can't believe it happened again. There was just not enough oversight. But again, Matt is the guy that they need to stand behind. I'm sure they're making plans to look at him and then look at other people, but there's no better person to run this program for the next few years than Matt Luke because he's one of them, kind of like Ed Orgeron getting a job at LSU. He should have got the job there because he loves that school, And so that pays great dividends, you know, when other people come in to try to hire you away. He's part of that program, but he's got life and blood involved in it.
Now, like I said, Coach Luke walks into a very similar situation to the one you inherited in Oxford. First-time head coach, working his way up the profession. He's going to have some scholarship limitations, no bowl game. No matter what they do, they can't compete in the SEC West for a title. How difficult is it to motivate players? Because it's very easy for this to go off the rails. If they're 1-3 in September, before you know it, there's chirps about transfers and kids talking about going early to the NFL draft. So far, amazingly, led by Shea Patterson, they've been focusing on the long game, and no kids have transferred, and they're going to give it their all Saturday after Saturday. But how do you motivate these players when the typical carrots you dangle in front of them, you don't have them at your disposal right now?
Yeah, no kids have transferred yet, and that's a big yet. And
correct.
That's Matt Luke's first responsibility is to sell the program again. But when I took the job, I had to bring in each player the first 2 weeks of December, knowing that when the sanctions came down, that those kids on the team could transfer anywhere else. So I had to re-recruit every player on the team before we went out and tried to give out our 12 or 13 scholarships that we had. And so we had double duty. I'll never forget this. We get the sanctions, and the next day we had five or six head coaches come in and set up hotel rooms in Oxford, Mississippi, and started calling our players, which was legal. They'd go over and interview with those coaches. And so it was, we had to re-recruit all of them. And we lost two very good players, a couple of defensive backs. And this same thing is going to happen to Ole Miss. Now, I don't know how the rules have changed since that 20 years ago, but I'm pretty sure that they're pretty much the same. And they've got some good players on the team, some that are going to look at it and say, listen, can't go to a bowl game. They might get another bowl year of sanctions. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's going to be more consequences. So they're going to look at the ability to, can I transfer, go to a winning program? Can I play there? What can Ole Miss do for me in terms of having the opportunity to be on television? I don't think they'll take television sanctions the way they did us. I think we were the last team that they did that way. But there's a lot of repercussions that the coaches are going to have to go through. So that's what I'm saying. Matt Luke, being one of them there, you bring a new coach in, man, I was caught by surprise. I didn't realize to that point that they could transfer. I had a growing process very quickly at Ole Miss in 1994, December.
Now, Coach, you left Ole Miss after the 98 season. You go on the plains to Auburn in somewhat infamous fashion. I'm not going to repeat the quote that everyone wants because this is our first conversation of consequence. But despite all the success you had eventually with the Tigers, do you look back at that in transition? Is there anything you might have done differently exiting one job, going to the next?
Well, there was a lot of things there. I didn't talk a lot about it, but there was more to it. I had every thought of staying at Ole Miss. The problem at that time that we were having, our coaches loved it. We'd worked through problems. We'd coming off the sanctions. We were winning games, and we left a very good football team when we left. But I had talks, negotiations with all the administrators there about, guys, listen, we've played with smoke and mirrors. Our facilities are terrible. We've got to do something. If you'll promise me that we'll put money in the facilities the next few years, you know, we'll look more at staying, because I had other teams other than Auburn that were visiting with us because our coaches had done a good job. It wasn't me. Ole Miss is a great place and great people, and they wanted to win. But I was told by the administration, we're going to wait 3 or 4 more years before we do anything to the facilities. And so my hands were tied. I would end up probably gotten fired because we were just holding on by threads at that time and selling a dream. So we made the move to Auburn because of the decision of the administration of not to make any improvements with facilities. We go to Auburn. A lot of people understood it. Some did not. Some that didn't know the real reason. And so there was a pretty good blow up about me leaving. But I did talk with the players, visited with them, told them, you know, that, you know, it's a business decision. So we left and we went to Auburn and we kind of picked up the pieces from another bad situation of a coach leaving in the middle of the year. It was back-to-back jobs. But usually when you leave, and go to another place. That place that you're going to has got its own problems.
Now, let's fast forward to the 2004 campaign with Auburn. It really was a dream season, 12-0 in the regular season. You win the SEC championship game. Along the way, you beat an LSU team number 5 in the country. You beat Tennessee twice, the first time they're number 10, the second time they're 15. You beat Georgia as number 8. We're talking about an undefeated team from the SEC, and somehow it sounds insane considering the environment we live in today, but the SEC was on the outside looking in at the BCS title game. It ends up with Oklahoma and USC getting the invite, and as I recall, it wasn't much of a competitive game, and the Trojans really trounced the Sooners. Is that any easier to digest a decade plus now than it was back then?
There's not many days that go by that I don't think about that, and how unfortunate, how unlucky, you know, that group of players were, because, you know, we'd gone through a tough situation the year before where we had Jet Gate and some of the higher-ups hired someone, unfortunately, and were going to move us out because they just, they, you know, at that time they just wanted to make a change, and everything kind of fell apart on them, and we were able to keep the job there. And then, fortunately for us, the next year, we had a great football team, but I knew that. But here's what happens. You've got to have kids that say, listen, you know, I'm not going to go to the NFL. I'm coming back. We had a lot of fifth-year seniors. We had Ronnie Brown, Carnell Williams decided to come back at running back, who were two of the best to ever play in the SEC, especially as a tandem. We had Jason Campbell. We had Carlos Rogers. We had 4 or 5 first-round draft picks. We were really good. And it just goes to show you sometimes people that don't know a lot about the football aspects and the programs, you know, the AP voters voted for Oklahoma, not really because of what they did that year, but because what they've done in the past. Now, they were undefeated. They didn't play near the schedule that we played. And, again, at the end of the day, we just got bumped a little bit at the end and ended up 3rd, played in the Sugar Bowl, beat Virginia Tech, and ended up 2nd. But ironically, the team that won at USC had cheated and had eventually had to vacate that national championship.
That's
I'm
right.
Still a little bit disappointed today that nobody stood up and said, listen, you know, we've screwed around with Auburn bad enough. Let's give it to them now, because they went undefeated and they were obviously a great football team, and show the teams that, you know, if you're going to break the rules and you win a championship, we're going to give it to somebody else and you're kicked out. But there's in 2004, there is not a national championship football team on the record books, but that's the way they won. You know, we'll live with being, I guess, number 2, but in my heart and on the players' fingers, as they were, and coaches, we did buy national championship rings for everybody.
Yeah, I imagine that's still a tough pill to swallow, even all these years later. Let's talk about the current installment of the Tigers. Maybe the most important newcomer to the SEC this year is going to be Jarrett Stidham, their new quarterback, and how he may be able to completely transform this passing game. But we also know the way Coach Malzahn runs his offense. He likes to have legs as the element of a quarterback. That's not what Stidham does. He's a decent athlete, but he's more of a traditional pocket passer. What's truly going to be the difference maker here for this offense? Is it going to be Stidham learning and adapting to the Malzahn offense, or Malzahn changing things up to some degree to make sure he takes the most advantage of a big right arm like Stidham?
You know, they got Stidham, they got Sean White. I think Sean White's a heck of a player. He just unfortunately has had to run the ball too much the last couple of years, taking a beating, but he can throw the football. I don't think there's a lot of difference between he and Stidham, so I think that's going to be a good 1-2 punch for the Auburn Tigers. The best recruit that Auburn got last year was Chip Lindsey. Chip Lindsey's a guy that, you know, he knows something about the passing game, which is going to help. Gus Malzahn, coach, it's almost impossible to do the best job you possibly can for an offense or defense as a head coach, to run one of them and do a great job in everything else. It's become so tough to do that. And so I think Gus understands that. He saw it. He saw the lack of a passing game. You know, I don't think the passing game was what it should have been on a college level. I think the running game was outstanding. I think Chip Lindsey will bring a passing game in that will help not just Stidham, but also Sean White. And I think if Chip Lindsey, runs this offense like we hear he's running, and Gus will allow him the freedom of setting game plans, which I think he will. I think you're going to see Auburn really flourish as an offense with already a very good defense and kicking game, probably the best kicker in the country, and Daniel Carlson. I picked them with a lot of people and talked. I've looked at everything, and I'm working a lot of SEC games. I think Auburn's got a great chance to win the SEC and maybe the national title if they stay healthy.
You're listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Our guest is Tommy Tuberville. The SDS podcast is brought to you by Ticket City. College football is quickly approaching, just a few precious days away. Some fantastic matchups on the horizon. Alabama, Florida State, Michigan and Florida, Georgia and Notre Dame in week two. I can't wait to go to that one myself. Now's the time to get your tickets. We've been working with Ticket City for quite some time. They are the experts in the field. Over 1.5 million customers served. They are just the place to go, have been for three decades now, and they're offering $20 off all of our podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com, enter the discount code SDS20, and you're going to get $20 off at checkout on your order. Again, that's TicketCity.com, discount code SDS20. Coach, coming back to you, I want to move to the game in Arlington between Florida and Michigan. A war of words to some degree between Coach McElwain and Coach Harbaugh. It seems like Coach Harbaugh in particular sort of brings the worst out of other people with his very bombastic and confrontational style. Just sort of your gauge on what we're seeing in the headlines before we actually get to the football field between the Gators and the Wolverines.
I think it'll be a good game between two teams that really have no clue where they're at, because Michigan lost almost everybody that they had last year. I thought they'd have a chance to be in the Final Four, and not doing it with the players that they had. I think if I was Jim Harbaugh, I'd think a little bit about talking, because they should have been a lot higher last year with the type of players all those kids drafted. Just amazing the talent that they're eating. Brady Hoke actually left Jim Harbaugh, so it's getting close to time to put up or shut up for Coach Harbaugh, because now that his recruits are starting to come up. Now, I'm sure he's done a good job. I don't know him that well, but I do read a lot of things that as a coach, you wonder, why would you get involved in saying something like that? I guess he's trying to sell his program. But Michigan doesn't have to sell their program like that. They're Michigan. And I know that Jim McElwain has had some problems. It looks like he's going to have 6 or 7, 8 guys suspended for the first game against Michigan in Arlington. It's going to be tough times. Now, they were very good last year on defense. But I don't see Florida being that good defensively this year. They lost a lot of players. Randy Shannon, who played and coached for me, ended up being the head coach at Miami when I was there. He's a very good coach. But it takes players to win games. Randy's got a lot of young guys he's going to have to play with. But I don't know how Florida cannot have a quarterback. Over the years, Steve Spurrier's had quarterbacks, Urban had quarterbacks, but there's just not been a quarterback there. And I heard somebody say, well, they're looking at three quarterbacks at Florida. If you've got three quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. That's always been a coach's thought. Somebody's got to stand up and be the guy. And if you're looking at two or three guys, it could be a long year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But in terms of the headline war, Coach McElwain is not going to name a starting quarterback. It's hard to blame him. But Coach Harbaugh has gone one step further. He won't even provide Florida brass with an official roster. It just seems a little petty. But what I don't understand is, I had a long career as a beat writer. I've been to 1,000 press conferences. And yes, coaches don't want to reveal anything that would help the other school from a game planning perspective. But then when you ask a coach about an injury on another team, the response is always, it doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter who they play. We're just going to play our game. So does it matter or does it not matter? It seems like the answer is just convenient to whatever the question is. Does it matter or does it not if you know who the other team is going to throw out there?
It really doesn't matter. The players are players. The thing that you really prepare for as coaches is numbers. What numbers come in the game? Are the receivers? Are they running backs? Do they have four receivers in the game? Is it two backs? And so it's more of a numbers game. That's what they're trying. They're trying to confuse them and put a situation where coaches probably at every team when you start, you really don't understand. There's some of these young guys, redshirt freshmen coming in. Have they Are they moving to DB? Are they moving to wide receiver? There's so many question marks. So it sounds a little bit trivial about not putting out a depth chart. I think that punishes the fans and the players as much as it does anybody because of the name recognition and those things. But it's just a first game. It's just a game within a game some of these coaches play. Harbaugh's not the first one to ever do that. After this week, there won't be much talk about it. But like I said, you can do all that stuff you want, but you better win games and championships. And right now, I think Michigan's looking from the outside in and winning a championship this year because they have a lot of young guys that will be playing.
Week one in the SEC, we're all very excited. Five neutral site matchups make week one just an awful lot of fun. We've talked about Florida, Michigan. Alabama, Florida State is the headliner for all the right reasons. BYU, LSU, another hurricane situation. That game's been moved from Houston to New Orleans now. But there's also South Carolina and NC State, which I think is an underrated matchup. And then, quote-unquote, Monday Night Football is Tennessee, Georgia Tech, another SEC-ACC clash. Coach, give me one of those games that may be flying under the radar that you're looking forward to watching.
Well, of course, everybody's looking at the Alabama-Florida State. And, man, are there a lot of question marks on both of those teams. So that'd be almost impossible to pick. I think this year – Alabama's going to be very good, and they could very well win it all, and Nick's done a tremendous job. But I think he has more question marks, especially defensively, than he's ever had. And when you have those, where are they going to end up? You know, you can sign all these five stars you want, but, five stars don't always pan out. It's usually those two and three stars that end up being the players in the long run. So that's going to be obviously a big game. I think Tennessee and Georgia Tech, I think Paul Johnson's done the best job of coaching than anybody in the country. He takes – very little talent, linemen, skilled players, and beats a lot of people in the SEC. Beat Georgia last year. Beat them almost every year. I think this will be a big game for Butch Jones. You know, Butch, that last year was his year, and they kind of fell on their face. They're very lucky to win the games that they won because they won on some very fluke plays at the end of the year. Last year, I remember, I'm doing the App State Georgia game this week in Athens. I watched that game last year. Well, App State should have beat Tennessee last year. So, I think Butch is under a little bit of pressure, but he's going to play against a team in Georgia Tech that can expose you very quickly if you don't know what you're doing on defense. So I think that'll be a game to watch.
Now, Coach, of course, I can't let you off the phone without talking about the big one, which is Florida State and Alabama. My contention, in a column I wrote Monday at Saturday Down South, is that as magnificent as this matchup is, the outcome is borderline meaningless because the college football playoff has taught us so far, if you win the SEC, you're in. If you win the ACC, you're in. This game is so early in the season, it has no effect on the conference standings. And even if a team wins by a touchdown or loses by 30, they can recover, win their conference, and make it to the Final Four. In your opinion, does that take anything away from the matchup itself?
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think it means a whole lot. I think it means a whole lot because both are in very tough conferences. Whoever loses can't lose another game. I'd be very disappointed if they take Florida State or Alabama, whoever loses this game, and if they lose another game in their conference, and I think both have a very good chance of doing that. I think that at the end of the year, I think Florida State has got some tough games, and I think Alabama's going to have a tough game, obviously, with Auburn in Auburn, which I think Auburn will be predicted to win if they're as good as what they think. So, there's a lot more consequences what you think in terms of the voters looking at it. Now, whoever wins it will be off and running because then they obviously can lose another game, get in their conference championship game, and lose, and then still have a chance to go. So the loser of this game has really got to pick up the pace. You can't stumble anymore because it's going to be hard with all the good teams across the country to have two losses and get an opportunity to step into that. If they pick a two-loss team over a team that's undefeated or with one loss that won a conference championship, they might as well throw out this college football playoff committee because it'll be useless. You can't pick them on name and what they've done in the past. It's about the teams that are playing this year, this season, that they look at and grade it. again, going back to my 2004 year, I think that really paid dividends for the teams that went to the championship game and we didn't get to go.
Okay, Coach, we'll agree to disagree there. My last question for you, if Alabama wins Saturday night in Atlanta, it's because of X. If Florida State wins Saturday night in the brand-new Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's because of Y. Please fill in those blanks for me.
I think it's because of both quarterbacks. Defenses are going to struggle a little bit because of new things put by the offenses on the other side. I think that the quarterbacks have to take advantage, especially the quarterback at Florida State's got to take advantage of a youthful defense from Alabama. I think the quarterback at Alabama has got to learn to throw the football down the field. I'm sure that Florida State's looked at ways of stopping the run. Let's make the quarterback stay in the pocket and throw it. If he hadn't gotten any better of staying in the pocket and throwing it down the field, Alabama's going to struggle this year. They do not have the defense they had last year. But you hear about all these great running backs that Alabama's got, but you can only play really one of them at a time. And so I think it's going to be a good battle. It could be a turnover deal where somebody wins three or four touchdowns, but because it's the first game of the year, but there's so many unknowns. I think the quarterbacks are the key to both these teams winning this week of how they play.
Coach, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you really enjoy your first season on the other side of the glass.
Okay, thank you.
That was Tommy Tuberville. You can watch him all season long on ESPN's various arms of college football coverage. And thank you for joining the Saturday Down South podcast. Special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsors, Bud Light and Ticket City. If you like what you heard, make sure you subscribe on iTunes and all the other outlets out there. Please give us the show a rating as well. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.